Okay, everyone, welcome back to the Pear Pod. Thank you all for supporting the last episode. I appreciate it's been a number of weeks, but as I said on my Instagram, I really want to try and not water down the guests and just focus on an output, you know, week after week, and really try and put out a piece of content that I'm proud of that'll, you know, last the time and, you know, live for a while on YouTube. So with that said, I'm delighted to welcome the founder of How's Your Head clothing brand, Mark Donnelly.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, that intro didn't last as long as I thought it would. I always have more ideas and then I get cracking into it. I was just saying to you there, I found your brand from two ways. I found your brand firstly because I was looking at brands to potentially sponsor the podcast.
Yeah.
And the niche I've kind of found myself in, not kind of planning it to be so, is just guys happen to come on who talk about the mental health, big focuses on that. And a lot of the guys who have their own companies seem to have gone through, you know, ups and downs and have dealt with that. And so I've kind of, without planning, kind of fallen into that niche. So, and then obviously I saw on the Irish Entrepreneur podcast, not 100% on the name, apologies, where they ask if you could invest in any business, what would it be? And your business came up, and then I did my digging from there. I want to dig into your past a little bit before, well, after, but I have one question for you to start off with, which I thought of earlier and I thought it'd be interesting. If you could design a campaign that would reach millions, what key message about mental health would you want to communicate?
Wow.
just drop the mic.
We're
off.
We're getting like, straight into that. That is a phenomenal, phenomenal question.
It only goes downhill from here. So,
well, I think, your best. Well, so obviously I'm a 29-year-old male. Most of my struggles were through my teenage years. Yeah, so I would consider myself still young, even though the gray hairs are coming through and the wrinkles. But it would definitely be targeted towards young men. Obviously, if we look at the stats, most of the young men are taking their own lives, unfortunately. It's one of the lead killers for men under the age of 35, whatever it might be. I'm not exact on those stats, but it'd be definitely targeted towards young males in order to kind of speak their mind more. And I think that's why I set up what I've set up, H2H, How's Your Head, to try get us all to talk more. But mental health is like so universal. It goes, like, there's no barrier to it. Every country, every culture, every language, every religion, everyone's in their own head 24/7. So it would be something along those lines, targeting young men, probably nearly preteen, because you want them coming into their teens before life starts to change dramatically, in touch with their feelings.
Yeah.
And I just don't think we're doing that enough. And that's why I tried to speak as openly and honestly and as raw as possible, to say, like, well, if Mark's doing it, why can't I? And it's so, so important, because I struggled and I suffered for like 10, 12 years before I ever went to speak to someone about my mental health. So I don't know exactly what it'd be, because that is an absolutely monumental question.
It's a ginormous opening question, to be fair.
But it's definitely something targeting young men in like teenage years in order to kind of be able to arm themselves with the tools they need for like a very challenging few years to come ahead of them.
And you, if we go back to when you first got the idea for HUH, like, what was the, you mentioned there, like, you struggled for a while beforehand. Do you have a catalyst moment that you remember? Not only do I want to start dealing with some of the issues I have, but also make an overall effort to kind of help it in general.
Yeah, there was a, like, I don't know if it was a catalyst moment, because it was just a buildup of everything. But there was a moment where I was like, I'm just so sick and tired of this, of these feelings of like not knowing what to do, where to go, what to say. And it was a case of like, it was just such a burden to be carrying for so long. So from the age of 12 to 24, I was very anxious. I had OCD. I had self-confidence issues. I piled on weight. And I was doing 101 different things to try to distract myself from my inner thoughts. And eventually, I'm sure we'll get into it, after college, I moved to America and I came back to Ireland during COVID. I was like, right, now is the time to do this, because I cannot live like this for the rest of my life.
And you mentioned there, like, you're 12. So obviously we're talking about 15 plus years ago when you're encountering that. Like, have you noticed a difference in access? What, number one, general conversation about mental health. But number two, do you feel like there's been an improvement in resources from, let's say, if someone's in the same position now versus when you were 12?
In terms of resources, I don't know. There's a lot of problem with resources and wait lists for like public services. Thankfully, I was in a privileged enough position to go like down the private route and pay, be in a position that I could pay for services and pay for therapy sessions. But for people who can't, there's a long waiting list. So I don't know if we've improved too much. It's definitely better. But what we definitely have improved on is the term and topic of talking about how we feel. And there is still a massive stigma surrounding it, hence why I do what I do. But it's a bandwagon I want everyone to jump on. You always hear this bandwagon, that, but this is a good bandwagon that I don't care. Everyone can jump on, get on board. We're talking about how we feel. Because I want to break down those barriers. And I do think that in the modern day, even though it's tougher, I feel, with the whole social media world, and if you're going through school right now with social media, with comparing yourself, it's tough. Yeah. But I think there's definitely more conversations happening because I speak to schools all over the country, right? Mm. And when I was 12, 13, 14, I never had someone come in and talk about anxiety, OCD, never. Or feelings.
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm at the top of the classroom and I'm the one talking about it. Mm. Or there might be some other specialist or someone who's like a professional in this field talking about it. And I never had that. So
So that's progress, at least in some aspects. Because as you said, like when I was younger, zero talk about like, and there was definitely 100% people in my school in my year that were experiencing these things, but just never conversation. People would be, there'd be like grief and stuff would happen for people to be upset about, but the general feeling of depression or not feeling great was never discussed. You obviously found then when you're 12 and like growing up, obviously it's not the coolest thing to be talking about with your friends and stuff like that. Did you have anyone to talk to about those things? Or did you find that that might, you know, alienate you from the group if you're bringing that stuff up?
Do you know what? It wasn't that I was afraid to say it to anyone. It's just I didn't know how to say it or what I was even experiencing, right?
So
I was so anxious on a daily and weekly basis. And then I had self-confidence issues, even though on the outside, I was this very confident, sporty, outgoing person doing 101 different things from, let's say, the age of 12 till 20, like with all the teams I played on and the sports I played. But at the same time, I didn't know how to turn to one of the lads and go, I'm feeling this way, because I didn't know what I was feeling.
Yeah.
I just knew it wasn't normal and it was making me feel what I now know to be anxiety and feel anxious. Mm. That manifested into OCD because I never dealt with it when it was anxiety and so on. And it was just then a domino effect.
Yeah.
And did you find, number one, you mentioned sport there and you talk about exercise and we'll get into that even more. But first off, what moments would you find your anxiety would really pick up? Was it in public places? Was it when you had something on the back of your mind you needed to do? Or was it more, even worse, just a general overall feeling of not feeling great?
So no, I can pinpoint it, right? So I can remember like the first time I've ever experienced it. And it gets a bit deep. So I remember I was 12, 13, 14. I would have been in the early 2000s growing up, and maybe late 2000s. But my dad was working in a bank. And at the time, for people watching or listening, Tiger kidnapping was happening. So my dad's worked in the bank all his life. He's retired now, like 10 years. But Tiger kidnapping was happening through the early noughties. And this is when a criminal gang will target post offices, credit unions, cash van drivers or bank staff and kidnap their family, right? So I was only 10, 11, 12 at the time. And we'd have no... Don't get me wrong. I'm going to give you the ending of the story right now. It didn't happen to us, right? But as a 10, 12, 13-year-old, growing up seeing, let's say, detectives in your house, saying, how are the cameras? How are the locks? How are the gates? Like, here's numbers. If anything ever happens, you call us. Mm. You're seeing it on the news. It was happening a lot in, like, North Dublin, and I'm out in Ashburn. So a lot of time it was happening in North Dublin, and they're being brought out to places like in Ashburn or Old Town or somewhere to like, hold them, right? Mm. So I was terrified this would happen. Okay. And you might be thinking, well, like it's an intrusive thought. I didn't know what that was at the time, but why are you worrying about that, Mark? It didn't happen, but it happened my granddad and his daughters. So my granddad was also in the bank, lived in Dundalk at the time. And during the troubles with the IRA, my granddad was driving my auntie and her friend to school. A van pulled out in front of them. Two lads jumped out with machine guns and kidnapped my auntie and her friend. Right. And it was all over the news. There was a ransom. They were kidnapped for 2 or 3 days. And when I speak to her now, like she actually says they treated her very well. Like they're giving her takeaways and chocolates and everything. But I grew up with those stories. So when this came to me, I was like, well, this happened to someone in my direct family. Yeah. Why couldn't it happen to me?
It's not that crazy.
Yeah. And it's no longer this fairy tale anymore. Not fairy tale, but it's no longer this distant, like
it's materialized.
Nightmare.
It is. Yeah,
so I grew up with that. And I just remember then from like the age of 12 onwards, I swear to God, I became hyper focused and fixated on the security of my own home.
Yeah.
Right. And from the minute I woke up in the morning, like I should be worrying about what time's training. What am I getting as a takeaway on Friday? What game am I playing on the PlayStation tonight? But all I worried about day after day after day was, what if someone comes to our house tonight? So I would literally sit up in the front room, and I can picture 12, 13-year-old Mark right now sitting on the edge of the bed just staring at the gate for hours and hours. Just
waiting for lights.
Honestly. And I would be so obsessed with, are all the doors locked? Are all the windows locked? Are the gates locked? And that turned and I manifested into OCD. So I became obsessed over it. So I would lock the door or the gate, and every 5 minutes I'd check it again. But I just did it. But my brain was tricking me into thinking, but what if, but what if? And that was like hours a day and week after week, month after month, year after year. And that was only the start.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, it really is. So that's when I can pinpoint it.
Yeah.
And as I grew older, it was kind of like when you're getting older, 15, 16, 17, you're like, this is not going to happen. And if it does, we're well able for this at this stage. You know what I mean? And I kind of maybe was like nearly becoming a bit braver. Like, oh, if it happens, I'll put up a good fight anyway. But I wasn't like,
I hope they come in here.
I wasn't as afraid, right? And obviously my dad then transitioned to different roles in the bank. So he was no longer in like a role like that. But then it just started to turn into like general anxiety or self-image issues or self-confidence issues that manifested like from the anxiety to OCD to so much more because I never dealt with it because I never knew what it was.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a,
Jesus.
A roller coaster.
Do you remember the first time hearing the term anxiety? Or like, do you remember the first conversation where someone was like, I think you may be suffering with anxiety? Or OCD. Or, do you remember getting that clarification from someone and being like, okay, this is a real tangible thing that other people suffer with. That's not just me. I'm not just, you know, going mad. There's a real thing going on here.
Yeah, I do. And it was the first time I ever went to speak to someone. So that would have been 2021.
Jesus, it's a long time.
Yeah, so I was 25 at the time.
Jesus.
So, well, 25, yeah, 24, 25, I finally went to someone. And I remember well, so I was sitting in the room. This is how much I think the stigma is still alive and well. So, right, I moved home and I had such an amazing time in America, but came home. I wanted to set up this mental health brand because I'm passionate about it. Finally had enough of all this going on in my head. For years and years and years in my head, but also in my chest, it just felt like this clamping sensation, like someone had a belt tied around me. And I was like, I'm going to deal with this. So I booked into a therapist, but I booked in 35 minutes from my house. So I didn't want to go to somewhere local because I felt like, what if people see me going in?
Can't go to the local GP or something.
Honestly.
Yeah.
But I also was the mental health guy at this time, but there was still that stigma. So I went, I remember her name was Anya, absolute legend, went into the room and I'm kind of sitting there like, I've never really spoke to anyone about my feelings ever.
This is going to be so interesting.
Honestly.
You know?
But I didn't know like, why does she care? Like it was such a weird feeling, right? So I went in anyway and we were having a chat and I remember sitting opposite her, probably nearly like the same distance we're away from each other. And it was the first time I've ever experienced like nearly like an outer body experience. And I've never taken a drug in my life, right? But I just remember through the session, I was sitting opposite her and she reframed my mind and changed my perspective. So we did this breathing technique and then she just told me how to think. And I remember during the session, I felt like I was beside her looking back at me.
Yeah.
And I remember so well her saying, you need to speak to yourself like you'd speak to your best friend. Because if you continue to speak to yourself, if you continue to speak to your best friend like the way you speak to yourself, you wouldn't have a best friend. So you need to treat yourself like your best friend because you are your own best friend because you're with yourself 24/7. But it was in that session that she kind of highlighted these things like intrusive thoughts, irrational fears, like growing up, anxieties, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, be it like reassurance, there's a religious compulsion, there's a sanitization compulsion. So I had one or two of them. And I wasn't, let's say, diagnosed, but she's like, this is this.
Yeah, but just to hear, if it was my case, if I think I'm dealing with this issue that no one else understands, just to hear another professional be like, maybe she lists a couple of things you're experiencing. You go, yes, that. And I even that could come as some sort of relief, just to be able to relate to someone on a level and be like, you kind of understand me, you know?
And it absolutely was. So the next thing I was going to say was driving home, right? When I'm in the car, even on the way here, I'm either calling someone, I'm belting out a song from Spotify, whatever I'm doing, I'm talking to myself, I'm thinking, what am I doing next? And that day, I just remember arriving home, okay? And I got into my driveway and I was like, how did I even get here? Like, it was just like I floated home. And I don't remember any red lights, green lights. I don't remember what I saw. But I remember just sitting in my driveway then like, why didn't I do that sooner? And it was like the belt had just been unbuckled and like the balloon had just been like released. You know what I mean? Obviously, there were still problems. It was day one. But I was just like, wow.
Yeah, progress.
Why didn't I go sooner? And obviously hindsight's wonderful, but you know what I mean?
You mentioned there you've never done a drug in your life. And I can obviously relate to tons of people who, when they're younger, especially experiencing something like that, might turn to alcohol or turn to drugs to just for escapism more than anything. Did you have that compulsion?
Yeah.
You want alcohol more than drugs?
No, it was food, to be honest. Oh, wow. Yeah, okay.
So, just like comfort eating.
Yeah, 100%. So it was such, it's such a crazy, I hate using that phrase, so excuse me. It was a wild like experience growing up. So it went from that, like all that anxiety and that story I just told you and growing up and it manifesting into OCD. But I used to then, before I went to ever speak to someone, I used to just eat my feelings, okay? So I piled on all this weight 1 year. And don't get me wrong, I wasn't bullied or anything. I had a great group of friends, and not to sound like fucking wanky, but like I was doing so much, everyone knew me from the golf club, the rugby club, the GAA club, this, whatever it was, the town. It's like, that's Mark, he's a good lad. So no one like bullied me, let's say, but I was just piling on all this weight, right? And then it was affecting my confidence inside, but then it was affecting my sports.
Which might be your only release or relief you're getting at that point, you know?
And it was like a year or two where I got up to like, I'd say 125 kg. I was heavy. Like, I think, I don't know what it is now. I'm like 18, 19 stone or something.
Yeah, we're talking, we're talking like plus 250 pounds, like 250, 270. So, it's a big boy.
It was massive. And I was 16, 17 at the time. And I remember one day, the switch just flipped in my head. I was like, I've had enough of this, right? And it was kind of like the kind of dawned on me with my mental health when I was 24. I was like, I've had enough of this. But I just went running every day for a full year. Right. And I was like, I'm not stopping until I lose 5 or 6 stone. So for 365 days, I ran every single day. And I remember day one so well. I went over to my local football pitch. And when I went to the pitch, a friend of mine, and like he would have been a lot older than me because I knew him from the golf club, but a friend of mine was with his wife and they were doing laps. And they're like, right, you're coming with us. You're not stopping until we're stopping.
You're like, nope.
And I was like, this is my first time ever running. Thankfully, they're near the end of their run. But I did 2 kilometers with them and my heart nearly exploded out of my chest. But that was the start of it. And then every single day, like no matter what, good days, bad days, weddings, funerals, school, whatever it might be, I ran, right? And you'll see it here. It says HUH365+1, okay? So years later, someone asked me that story and they're like, I heard you saying, I did a talk with Rory Stories. I'm not sure if you know him the venue in Ratote. I told that story about running every day and losing 6 stone and my wardrobe had to be completely changed. And they're like, well, what did you do on day 366? Like after the full calendar year of running. And I was like, I had my shoes on and my running gear on. I was halfway down the road before I realized what I was doing.
And you formed a habit.
100%. And I don't know why, but he just out of his mouth was like 365+1, baby. And I have now HUH365+1. And it's a reminder of me to like show up for yourself every day. Resilience, you're building habits. You're showing up day after day after day because look what you achieved then. You can do it again. And you survived 100% of your worst days so far. Having said that, to throw a complete spanner into the works is
the bank robbers came back.
It actually kind of turned into a negative too, right? So there was so much positive, but it turned into a negative because then my OCD, which was inside me, which is a part of my like obsessive nature that I didn't know I had, I could not then do a day or go a day without running. And it turned into quite a negative.
And it would negatively affect your day if you didn't get the
running. Absolutely. Sure. And that also affected my food because I became so hyper fixated on what I ate and so focused on what I ate. I would eat the same foods every day. And if I couldn't, I feel like I'm not going to be as concentrated. I'm not going to perform as well tonight in my match because I didn't get the light 5K in, or I didn't eat the protein oats or the scrambled egg this morning. So
the carbs are too low.
Honestly. So it just has a total mental like mind. I don't know if I can curse in this curse mind away, fuck, baby. Right? So it was actually just, it was wild because you're going through the motion so much and you've lost all this weight and it's great. And now it's suddenly turned into a negative. And now I still to this day have a like an interesting relationship with food and exercise. And I'm obsessed with them both. And I try to do as much as I can, but I also really enjoy not doing it and eating shit. So it's a fine line that I kind of balance and act.
Just quickly while we're there. When you're binging on food, let's say back in the glory days, like what was the go-to?
I still a pizza guy. And just so much of it. Because I can still eat like I used to. So I remember I did a really long distance cycle and run earlier in the year. And I got home and I ordered like a large pizza with 5 sides and 2 desserts. And you could like just hook the garlic dip up to my veins.
We're going to have to take a quick break. Sam just left the room.
Stay outside like this.
It was just quickly get in. I love a chat about it. Like I have a local chipper around the corner from me that just
they know me too well at this point. But it, yeah, like I would be similar. Like so far, everything in terms of exercise, food, everything like that. We'll get into this even more, but like exercise for me now, regardless of what it is, my day doesn't feel started until I've done something. It doesn't need to be crazy. We're good walkers. Obviously, we have a gym around the corner, but now it's, even if it's stretching, it's something in the day that starts me off.
100%.
And I even now, like when I talk to people that don't exercise whatsoever, the feeling of being like, or people who don't drink a lot of water, like, you know, like those kind of things. Yeah. I'm like, man, like if I don't get in 3 liters and I only get in 1.5 liters of water, I feel it. So now I'm constantly thinking like, what are you feeling day to day? When like for them, if they're like, oh no, I just had, you know, 5 Diet Cokes and some orange juice. Like, what are you feeling inside, you know?
I had this chat literally 2 days with someone and I said, how do people go from one end of the year to the other or one end of the week to the other without getting out in nature or fresh air? And like, don't get me wrong, I love running and I love the gym. That's not for everyone. Maybe it's walking, but even for people who don't actually like exercise, no one ever liked it.
Yeah.
It just becomes a habit and then you do start to like it. It's like anything.
Yeah.
But I just don't know how people maybe roll out of the bed first thing. And I'm a big breakfast guy who don't eat breakfast. Yeah. And they're like, don't get fresh air or don't go for a walk. I would be cracked.
Yeah.
Like properly, I would not be, I'd be a demon. Like no one would be able to deal with me.
Imagine the weeks and weeks on end. Like my missus is a PT and she, I remember one client that reached out on her outreach was like, oh, water. She's like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe on Saturday I drank a bottle of water when I was out on a walk. Like to be able to know on the day when you drank water, like that's insane. But it's just like those little things people aren't as aware of. And I think that's a huge part of your social is exercise and getting out in nature. That's a huge part of it because it makes such a massive difference, you know.
But here's the thing, exercise is the most underutilized antidepressant because in school we're not educated on these things. No one told me what endorphins are.
Yeah.
And then I went running. I was like, why do I feel amazing?
It feels unreal.
And why am I sending out voice notes to everyone? And why am I going like just on such a high that I can take over the world right now? And then like when you're growing up, you're not told that. And it's like the mental health message too. You're not told what anxiety is. You're not really taught much in school that.
They just kind of think this is how people feel.
Yeah, 100%.
Kind of tired, really like dry and dehydrated. And you're like, this is just the day.
But now you can understand why people are cranky or more stressed or they're going nuts on road rage. And you're kind of like, what's going on?
They've had 4 monsters on the way to work. Like, I'm ready to kill someone. Skipping on a little bit. Why clothing? Of all the things you could have gone into, why clothing?
Yeah, so like I said, I moved to America. And just so I explained that I was over there as a brand ambassador selling whiskey. And
Jameson?
Tullamore Dew.
Okay,
fair. Yeah, number 2, unfortunately.
I applied for the Jameson Grand thing back in whatever, when you were 18. No one knew what to do. And I was like, oh, this is going to be huge. And then I didn't get it. I remember the devastation when I was like, really? Thank you so much. Because it was a video application.
I made this
wicked video because I obviously had like experience in that. And they were like, it's not really, like I remember the email back was like, really impressed with the video. But like you didn't go into anything that like they wanted like sales experience and stuff like that. And obviously didn't have any of that. So they were like, really great video. 18. Not really what we're looking for. Yeah. I was like, oh, great. But that, I remember that, like I was actually away with my brother and my dad. And I remember that, like, I was like, my life's over. This is like the weekend I'm going to celebrate the end of my life. And just looking back now, it's just wild you said that. Sorry, continue.
So I went abroad with Tully and it was the best, like not to rub it in, but it was the best experience I've ever had.
Just changed everything for me.
I was a bit older. I think I was 22 or 3. It was a grad program. But I kind of knew even before I went out there, I'm really good with people. I love selling. I love chatting. Like I talk to the wall if I was in here alone. And I love hearing people's stories. But a really good trait of mine, I think, is like I don't really hard sell, but I'm really good at building relationships. And people buy from people. Like
sales are, man.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I loved it out there. I became one of the top salesmen and the salesmen in North America, which sounds a lot better than it is because
don't even sell it down. It's huge.
I was in Wisconsin, right? And it's minus 10 for 7 months of the year. So whiskey keeps them warm. But I moved home and I wanted to do something about mental health. I mentioned that I wanted to finally chat about mental health and deal with my own problems. So I knew I could sell. I knew I was good with people. But I was like, how am I going to turn this into something mental health related, right? Could I write a book? I'm terrible at like just anything like that. My grammar is horrific.
That would be where my head would be. Would be like book would be like the public speaking, which you're obviously doing now would be a good thing. But obviously the clothing thing is just obviously a way for you to reach as many people as possible, you know?
That's it. And I knew if I could put these 3 letters on something like a hoodie or a t-shirt, people are nosy enough to ask what it meant. Okay. And if I can get people to ask what it means, I can get the conversation started. And if I can get the conversation started, we can work on the stigma and break it down. So to be honest with you, it was a form of self-expression because I started a brand before I started talking about my own mental health.
Yeah.
So I created a brand for people to ask me the questions I never had growing up.
It's actually almost a selfish thing in the weirdest way. You know what I mean? Not in a bad way, but that was even the mindset with it. It's mad.
Yeah. And I just knew at least there's something physical and tangible that I can exchange for someone's 20, 30, 40, 50 or whatever it might be. Mm. And even if the quality is crap at the start, I know if we keep our, like keep the shoulder to the wheel here, it can only get better and better and better. And initially people still to this day buy in for the message and then they realize, okay, the quality is actually really good now too. So it's... That's why I went into clothing.
I've had a couple of different guys on here who own different clothing brands, like fitness space, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And every single one of them, either number one would say, if I could do it again, I wouldn't go into clothing because, number one. And they said that the start is the hardest because you have, you're making rookie errors. You don't have relationships with manufacturers. Mm. You don't know about quantities of stuff to order for sales, all this kind of stuff. And, they all mentioned that going back, there's so many other industries you can go into where the margin for error is bigger. You can make more mistakes. Where clothing is quite unforgiving.
Yeah.
What was that first year like, or even first 6 months like, of being like, all right, clothing?
Mine was different. Like mine was like at the start of COVID and it just exploded. Mm. So I'd nearly argue that year three is tougher because there comes a point in the life cycle of like a brand or a business where you'll see we're in like just over year four, but year three where... you're trying to meet demand, you're trying to keep demand, you're trying to manage your cash flow. You have all these overheads, but you may not have the cash flow, but you have this brand name. So there's a lot of stressors and like we can get into this now as the podcast goes on, but it's been a whirlwind. Mm. Year one and two, we were popping off on TikTok. I could not keep the hoodies in stock. I remember like at the end of year one and we had like a few hundred thousand in sales. I was like, what's happening here? I'm in the box room of my parents' house. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it was just something I could never have imagined. Mm. And year two was the same. Then year three and year four was a whole dynamic change and a shift. So it was really, really good. I really like leveraged and utilized TikTok as organic views. Cause when you're small, you have no marketing budget when you're operating out of the box room of your parents' house.
Preaching to the choir. Yeah.
And I kind of leveraged and used the fact that I was the small guy. So like the David versus Goliath, if you want to use that as a like a metaphor nearly. But I was using the fact that I'm writing every handwritten note. When someone has an issue, they're talking to the owner.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go to a bigger brand, you're maybe talking to a robot or you're talking to a customer service agent, but you're talking to me personally.
Yeah.
And I will pick up the phone or I will drive to your house.
Like they're watching a video of you and they're going, oh my God, I totally relate to this guy. Buy a hoodie. And then the order comes in, they have a delivery question, they call you up and they go, hi, I just ordered a thing. They go, yeah, it's Mark. How are you doing?
That's
it. And that's all like marketing is. I don't know if you know who Christian Guzman and he owns Alphaly. Yeah. He put out a thing recently. They're going through a big change in how they market, like their strategy with influencers and everything. And he was like, if I could tell anyone starting a brand now, like double down on your story, double down on your why.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be able to make the same combination of poly blend to make the hoodie stretchy or whatever people want. Those are the everyone can start a brand now, especially with like even heard some of the biggest clothing fitness brands in the world. They all have the same suppliers. They're all going the same people.
There's no secrets out there anymore.
So the magic is in the story. The magic is 100%. In the why.
And like you said, people buy from people.
Exactly. Yeah. So the market's right there. You mentioned there like the difficulties came in like year three and four.
Yeah.
For someone who obviously deals with like mental health issues and like stress probably isn't the best thing for you. Mm. Did you like looking back now, are you like, it's such a crazy thing that I've now gone into where there's so many stressors coming on, like a million different things. And have you either been impressed with how you've handled that or have you had to adapt to be able to deal with all this new stress coming in? You know,
it's so tough to kind of process, right? Cause it's such a contradiction at times.
Yeah.
I set up a mental health brand. Okay. But then the stresses of owning a business come.
Mm.
But in order to get where you want to go, whether it's business, whether it's sport, whether it's like fitness goals, you need to sacrifice a lot. Mm. So I look at one of my friends, Glenn, right? Shout out to Glenn. I'll tell him to listen to this.
Shout out, Glenn.
He's an animal. He played hurling for Dublin for years.
Yeah.
And people look at him and they think, how did he get like that? And you're like, well, he worked for 15 years to look like that and play like that and perform like that. And it's kind of
dedicated his life to
it. Yeah. And people look like at businesses and they look at athletes, and Michael Jordan said it as well. And I won't try to directly quote him because I just can't, I don't remember it, but it's overnight success after 20 years of hard work.
Yeah.
And then people think, cause they just see it and go, well, that is overnight success, yeah. But they don't see the late nights. They don't see the hard work. They don't see the stresses, right?
The secret is no secret.
That's it, yeah. Right? And there's no magic pill you can take for something to work. But when I kind of looked at him over the years, I'm like, that's so impressive, that level of commitment.
Yeah.
And I realized that that's what I need to put into my business. And I know it's mental health related, so we're going to have to try and manage the stresses and the mental health and anxiety. But if you want to be what you want to be and get where you need to go, you need to do the things that others won't. You know what I mean? And it's been a catch 22 because year one and two really strong, year three and year four were a shit show, right? So business started to slow down. I haven't actually said this, I don't think, on a podcast, because we're only really a year from the major shit show, right? So year three started to slow down. And I was kind of like, direct-to-consumer sales started to slow. We came out of COVID. The PUP is gone. People aren't just sitting at home waiting to spend their money, right? We're back to normal life, holidays, restaurants, all this sort of stuff. So I became quite self-aware to think there was a stage where I didn't buy myself a new piece of clothing, like not my brand, obviously, other than my brand for like 6 months.
Yeah.
And like, I'm spending it in restaurants. I'm spending it on holidays I missed, and I'm spending it on all the good times I missed during COVID. So I was like, what can we do? We shifted to like a corporate focus, like bulk orders, school talks, corporate talks, and they became the bread and butter of the business, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And they still are, right? But you're coming into year four, right? And it's slower than it was in year one and two, which is hard to take, right? But so be it. Like, these things come and go, you know what I mean? And then personally, it just got a bit tougher, right? Mentally. And my relationship just wasn't working. I had to end the relationship I was in. And that was really tough because there was so much love still there.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't working for us. And I kind of said to her, listen, we're just not aligned right now. And it was like a bit unexpected. Yeah. So that was 12 months ago, last month. So I'm about a year through it now. Mm-hmm. So the business was slowing, my relationship ended, and it was such a tough thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I've gone through so much healing and personal development since then. 2 months later, my mom got diagnosed with cancer. Jeez. So it was kind of like the business was at the lowest, then it was my relationship, then it was my mom, right? And I just remember sitting there thinking, why the fuck am I doing this? Like, it was just three sucker punches in a row. And I was so stressed. I didn't know what to do. I actually went out and got another job, and I was like, I'm not letting this mental health message die, but I just need to get something else to have a steady income and to take that financial stress off my plate.
Yeah.
Because once that's off my plate, the other stuff will flourish. Once you're like, okay, all my bills are covered here. Because one thing there I didn't mention was when that started to happen, I took like 6 or 7 months off, right? But all the overheads are still there. All the bills are still there. And the tax man was still knocking. So I had all these bills to pay, and let's call it debt, because it was debt, but no income, because I needed to just take a break from HUH clothing. So then I went and got another job, and I was like, right, let's pull ourselves out of this, okay? Went back to therapy, got another job, and I just started working on myself like no tomorrow. But it was one stage of my life, like the 6 or so months last year, that was in the darkest place ever, like ever. Turned to running. Running is my saving grace. Some of my closest friends and family are amazing. Therapy was amazing. But it was just very, very difficult. I remember one thing, my brother was abroad at the time. He was in Erasmus in Spain, and he texted me, and he knew I was just going through it. And he's like, listen, Mark, these tough times are the best times, right? And he goes, these horrible few months are going to be the best chapter in your book.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to just read a book of this amazing success because it's unrelatable. But when you're talking about you're in the trenches, sales are slow, your relationship ended and your mom is sick, that's the chapter I want to read, because when you come out of it, and you will, it's going to be a great fucking story.
Smart guy.
And I turned to him, I was like, I agree. And a few months later, I was like, I have a name for the book. It's just going to be resilience. And I thought back to the 365 days where I ran constantly and I lost all the weight, and I kind of leaned on memories and look back at times where I was like, I've been through 100% of my worst days. Just keep showing up for yourself. So that's kind of a little podcast exclusive there, because I have never really talked about it. My mom is now like kind of 12 months into her journey with cancer, and like getting there. I'm obviously out of my relationship a year, and I'm in such a much mentally healthier place than I was. And then of course, when you're mentally healthy and you have more clarity and you're fit and you're happy, the business starts to flourish again. So things are looking up.
First of all, I hope your mum is okay.
I hope
she listens to this and finds heartwarming from this.
She will.
Two questions. Number one, about your relationship. Mm. Would she look at that and say the starting of the met of HUH like kind of pulled you away from the relationship and your focus went slightly more to there? Or do you think it was inevitable and maybe it just sped things up?
No, so I started HUH in 2020 and then we only started going out in 2022. So okay. I was like in the middle of
You were in it already. Yeah, okay. Because yeah, so. Obviously with like, especially with people in that years between like 18 and 22, where you go from school, like a structure, a girlfriend and all those things are a lot easier in that period. You're in college, you have classes and then you're back home and you can go and see each other. But when you transition from not even a job, but into an entrepreneur running your own business, there isn't hours. Do you know what I mean? There isn't spare hours there, and a lot of focus goes into that. So it can obviously be a reason that priorities get shifted. But number two, in those years, 3 and 4, was there ever any thought to be like, I don't know if I can keep going with this. Maybe we had a good run and I need to readdress it. Yeah.
Nearly every second day.
Yesterday.
Like, why am I doing this? Like, because it was like the second half of last year, really, and the very start of this year. So if you think like September 2023 to March 2024 was like the toughest few months of my life. And I was probably in the Phoenix Park every day running. Mm-hmm. And that was why I'm one escape. And I love the Phoenix Park. If you ask me where my favorite place on earth is, it's the Phoenix Park, and which is bizarre to say.
No, I live very close to there.
Yeah,
it's great.
I love it. Yeah. And that's my safe haven. And it still is. But there was every second day. But it was my friends. And I've already shouted out Glenn, but Darren and Eddie and like my brother Dave, my sister. Everyone's like, no, this is too important to let go.
Yeah.
So you do what you need to do and let's get back to it. Because people are not relying on you, but people are here. Like you have thousands and thousands of customers worldwide. I'm a brand ambassador for Mini Ireland. And they're like, you need to inject that self-confidence back into yourself because look how far you come. You can't leave it now. And when I saw that and when I heard that, I was like, okay, maybe you're right. Because as I mentioned, growing up, I had like a lack of self-confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And at times when I'm feeling anxious, that can come back in and creep back in.
You need a little bit of reinforcement maybe, or just someone to build you up a little bit, 100%.
Oh, absolutely. So 100%. There was days and weeks where I'm kind of like, why didn't I just go into tech when I was 20 and come out of college and get one of those jobs where people are earning all this money and have a cushy, not cushy lifestyle, but you know what I mean?
No, like, it is cushy.
Yeah.
If you can get into one, and there's Dublin and Ireland is one of the best places if you're looking for that. I actually just had Sean Cullen on my podcast, who is a fitness dude. And he left YouTube and fitness and content creation to go into that corporate job in Dublin, did that for 4 years. And I followed Sean on his YouTube channel and he was growing fast. More like consistent viewership, was getting sponsorships, and then he left everything, went into the corporate world. 4 years later, corporate world is not for me. I have no passion, there's no inspiration. And he left the very cushy, like six-figure salary to move to Australia and be a full-time YouTuber again. And he even said on the podcast, he was like, even if this is the complete wrong decision and I like financially am scarred for the rest of my life or whatever, it's still worth me making the punt on myself, basically, and following my passion. And he's now down in Australia. He's doing online coaching. Shawnee, good to see you, bro. Hopefully see you back soon. But that's just one example. And it's tons of people who are like, they follow their passion instead of going through the easier route. Like, so that's
absolutely. I'd rather do it and fail. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
Jesus.
And it can't get much harder than like, let's say last year.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. There's days and months and weeks where this is not profitable, but it's the end goal. That's the goal. You know what I mean? 100%. It's not now. You have to sacrifice for long-term goals and long-term kind of passion projects. That's what I'd call it. Because like I said, I have a full-time job with this full-time job of owning my own business. So
is that still the case now?
Yeah. Yeah. I still kept it. Yeah.
Fair play.
I didn't want to kind of get complacent again. I want to make sure like when I go back at it, I'm doing it right this time, because I've learned so much in the last 2 years from what I've done wrong to apply now going forward, if that makes sense.
So what have you sacrificed apart from sleep then in terms of like keeping a full time? I'm in a similar boat. I have Pear Creative and I have the Pear Pod and then I have a full-time client that I do influence marketing and social media for.
Yeah.
And so I'm constantly in a bit of a balancing act where I'm like, you know, an opportunity might come up for Pear Creative where we've got quite busy, which is the videography side. And my podcast, like the episodes start to slow down because I'm putting emphasis into here. And then there's a big job with the client and 3 or 4 weeks goes into there. And I find it quite difficult to, I also feel very bad about myself when I miss podcasts for 3 or 4 weeks, because this is one of my favorite things to do. But it's trying to find where do I put, if I have 10 energy balls in me and I'm putting 6 into my full-time client and then I have another 4 I need into Pear Creative, there's nothing left for here. So just trying to find I guess hours in the day or how to structure my time better. But have you obviously dealt with issues of that? Or, you know, you have a huge day with your full-time gig and then you come home and you've got 10 other things you got to do for HUH before you even think about dinner, you know?
I have. And there a lot of the time, there'd be a lot of guilt and shame associated with over the years. So I'm getting better at that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of just being real with myself at this stage. It's like, what am I going to prioritize? So when I'm prioritizing it, it's obviously the full-time job, exercise, and fueling myself. So make sure I'm eating. Then we can attack the HUH stuff, because at the end of the day, if I'm not fed and I'm not feeling good after a run or a gym session, I'm never going to be able to proactively get on to this podcast or talk to any corporate clients. I was speaking with Grant Thornton and Sisk today. Shit. Yeah, so we do a lot of that stuff, but I'm never in the right mind frame or mindset if I don't have my other things ticked off.
Yeah.
Yes, I do sacrifice a lot, because without doubt, an hour a day, I'm either running or I'm walking or I'm training. So there's an hour that some people may not sacrifice. But right now I'm single and I have all this flexibility. I live at home. So I've known these massive overheads bogging me down.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of still in that kind of flexible era, even though I'm 29.
You got to embrace it. Come on, this is the case. I'm sure you're in the same boat, like 29-year-olds, like friends of yours. Everyone's in this similar boat. Like I'm lucky to live. I live with my fiance just up the road.
Yeah.
But like all my mates are still living at home, or they've emigrated to Australia or stuff like that. Yeah. Like everyone's in a very similar boat.
Absolutely.
Number one, you mentioned, we went back a little bit, the community you have, your friends, your family, stuff like that. I look at HUH kind of exactly as that. And if you can build a community of people that are opening to having this conversation, the 12-year-old you who didn't really one understand what he was feeling, but two have a place to talk to people about that, just your brand alone, even just two people wearing the same hoodie walking past each other, can be like, you get it. Do you know what I mean? That gives me like goosebumps even saying that, because that's exactly what you were talking about, but that's exactly what it is.
It's a community, right? And anyone wearing the product is seen as like a mental health advocate. And the reason that you want to see the amount of DMs and messages over the years, I have some of the just most bizarre stories ever. Like there was one time that someone messaged me from an airport in Chicago. It wasn't O'Hare, it was the other one that the name escapes me, and he was like, I literally just bumped into another person in this airport. It's a smaller, not a regional airport.
Yeah.
It's in Chicago. And we were both wearing the same product. She was running for a flight. She stopped me to say it. It's like, I have no time to stop, but this is so weird because this is an Irish brand and I'm in a Chicago airport. And then I get messages to beat the band of like, wore this to a family gathering. My cousin was like, huh, what's that? He started ripping it out of me. And next thing you know, we're talking about our feelings for 3 hours. And we've known each other since we're four, but we never knew each other. We're struggling with that. And it's those moments where I'm like, last year, I think of those moments to say, this is way more than just three letters. It's way more than just
hoodie. It's more than a hoodie. Yeah, 100%.
And 100%. One of the best moments, well, we'll call it the best moments, but really, really kind of pivotal moment in the whole thing was I used to do these random acts of kindness. I still do them, but not as much, where I used to fill up boxes with products and leave them around the streets of Dublin or Galway or Cork. So one time I did it locally, not locally, kind of North Dublin, Ashburn, right? Left a few boxes out. That was fun. Had a great morning.
Last long.
No, honestly, right? So we do that and we tell people we're doing it. So there was times where people were like hunting us down. So it's so much fun. But one day did it, and I remember getting home and I got a message on Instagram, and it was this paragraph after paragraph, and it was a young lad, right? And I was like, okay, this is different. He goes, my mom basically asked me to reach out. She doesn't have social media, and my family just really want to thank you. I'm obviously paraphrasing this, but my dad came home today through the doors with this bright orange HUH hoodie on, and he looked like a traffic cone, right? And they're like, firstly, my dad doesn't do that, because if my dad came in like that, you'd be like, what's going on here? And he goes, we're all sitting around the aisle, and he started dishing out these hats and t-shirts and hoodies, and he took out the little note to say this is what it was. Okay, I was like, it's the first time we've seen our dad smile in about 8 months, right? He hasn't spoke about his mental health. He's been struggling so much. My mom was crying, my sisters were crying, and they're just like, my whole family just wants to thank you. And he goes, I know this isn't going to change what's going on, but you just gave us one moment today that we haven't had in like a year or two. And I remember reading to my mom and my sister started crying, and I was reading it like, what the hell? Like, this is having a much bigger impact than I could ever imagine. And I get so many of those messages. I get so many of them after I speak to schools. People email me or DM like, thanks so much. And I can't even reply to them all. And I don't reply to them all. There's just too many. Thanks so much. I was struggling with this and I've never heard someone else speaking about it. So that's kind of like the community we've built. And I've got a lot of customers saying people see them as an advocate, like I mentioned, but Mark's wearing the brand. I feel more comfortable talking to him because he clearly supports the mental health message.
Yeah. You're like a,
I don't want to say shining lights. It sounds crazy, but just, I remember we'd have people come into the school. They talk about a career day, stuff like that. So things that come in, even like sex ed stuff. And I remember sitting in classes and people would come in and talk.
Yeah.
Never about something like that.
No.
And like, never. Even when I go back to like, even leaving cert, it sounds so trivial at the time, but in sixth year, leaving cert, even fifth and sixth year, like that is the, like, I remember the stress and the burden of even my parents being like, you gotta make sure you do your best. And like me knowing I'm not the best student. I excel in other things. I'm not the best student. And just feeling that pressure of like almost knowing in August, I'm about to disappoint everyone. And like, even just, and obviously it helped afterwards having people now, even with podcasts, people talk about things after the leaving cert, people who've succeeded after, you, countless examples of people who go on to do great things. But if I'd had someone like you or someone to come in and talk about, hey, I know you're probably feeling a bit overwhelmed and a bit stressed, but you know, focus on doing the best you can. Like that's all you can do. Even to have that would be huge. What age, is it secondary school or primary school you're speaking to, or is it a mix of both?
It's just mainly secondary school. I've only done one primary school, and the only
primary one would be heavy.
It was tough. Yeah. Like it was very tough, but my sister's a primary school teacher. So she was like, this is how you need to do it. Yeah. But I don't know if I'd do them again because they're too young. Yeah. And mine is more so like towards like 16 and up.
Yeah.
It's still first or second years are fine. Third years are fine.
It's like fourth year old.
Yeah. But more so targeting adults like nearly. But I was kind of the same. I actually did a radio interview today talking about the Leaving Cert because I posted recently, here's the things that wouldn't have happened if I got the points I wanted.
Yeah, facts.
Because I got my sixth choice on the CEO. Then I went to college to do a course I didn't want. Mm. Then I met my best friends.
What was top of the list, your CEO?
I can't remember.
Did you know what you wanted?
I think it was commerce in UCD. Yeah, is that a thing?
Don't need any more of those.
I can't remember, it's so long ago, but it was definitely like five or six. Then I went to college to do a course I didn't want, met the friends that I never knew I'd have for life. Mm. They're still some of the top customers, some of these lads. And I'm like, you have to stop paying for this. I can give it to you, right? Then I went to America, and from all my experiences and my passions, I turned into HUH. So I don't think, like, it was a domino effect, but I don't know how life would have went if I got the top course. Mm. And what I was saying today, it was for a local radio, LMFM out in Mead, Loudonmead, is you have PLC courses, you have level sixes, sevens, whatever it is. There's
really
ways,
good PLCs. There's really good stuff now. Yeah,
exactly. Away around everything. Yeah. There's people in trades that will be way more successful than people who go to college. Yep. So like, college isn't the be all and end all. It was really good for me because I needed a piece of paper to get a job to go to America. Mm. But other than that, like, we need to stop stressing ourselves over like a memorization test. It's not a
facts.
I've learned more in life than I will ever learn in school, you know?
Amen. And you mentioned there, like, you, as the brand starts to like evolve, I'm sure you're getting reached out to by different organizations, different companies wanting to collaborate with you.
Yeah.
Everyone can, like, obviously some will see the value in what you're doing in terms of the mental health conversation. Some people will see the numbers that you're doing and the community you're building and want to take advantage of that. How do you navigate like partnerships and stuff? What are you looking for in someone if you do partner with them?
Yeah, well, I've said no to so many big organizations, and like, there's times where you need the money, but you're just like, no.
Yeah.
Like, you don't align. And even with we've done a lot of influencer marketing, but I try to meet the person first to kind of feel them out. Like, would you be my friend?
Yeah.
Like, if you're a friend of mine, you'd be a friend of the brand, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I kind of learned that in my Tullamore GU days. It kind of falls back to that of like that relationship building. Mm. Same applies to influencers, same applies to other brands, same applies to corporates.
Yeah.
So for example, if a massive corporation, I won't name any names, but one came to me, they wanted to do all this sort of stuff.
Yeah. But sounds they don't. Like a Google, something like that. Yeah, I could see Google loving you, like 100%.
We haven't actually worked with them yet. But one organization came to me and I was like, but you don't do anything for your staff. This is just a box ticking exercise. Mm. It's not what I need and it's not what you need and it's not what your staff need. Give them a hoodie, but what are you going to do after that? You know what I mean? So sometimes it's just like virtue signaling and a lot of shite. So I'm like, no, thank you. Yeah. Thanks, but no thanks. I'll pass on that. I'll go work with someone who wants to actually like build a program around their staff. And listen, don't get me wrong, I can't help with that. But we can just start promoting it and working on it daily, weekly, monthly, yearly.
But you need to see the intent from them.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. I agree. Do you have any like partnerships even you've done this year or coming up that you're excited about?
Yes. Well, so there's a lot of corporate ones that we do and they're great. So CISC have been amazing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think cracking the construction industry is something massive because it's dominated by men, young men as well. So CISC have been such a massive help to me over the years. John Buckley and CISC, I'll pass this on to him so we can listen to that to shout out to But I remember he just kitted out like so many sites around Europe, and now we're working with CISC again to work with some Irish sites. Nice. AIB did a lot of work with me over the years. We did last collaboration in 2022, and they have a team of like mental health advocates throughout the company. I can't remember the name of the team now, but it's like some mental health care. I'm just butchering it now, but it's a team of advocates essentially. And then we're actually working with them again this year. So we're in talks now to do what we do, like community meetups and walk and talks, to try just keep pushing the message consistently. So my main one is Mini Ireland, and I love the ground that the people of Mini and BMW walk.
The car is lovely.
Because it's the most, like, just, I can't fathom it. Like, why was I given a car? Yeah. And when they first reached out to me in 2022, I ignored the email, deleted the email. Right, if someone emails you and like, there's a car, I'm like, no, I run a kind of small Irish clothing brand here.
No, you've got the wrong email. It's .ie, not .com. Thank you though.
And I deleted it, and then another email into my inbox 2 weeks later. I was like, Mark, did you see our previous email? And I was kind of calling their bluff. Then I was like, all right, here we go.
Yeah.
Right, let's jump on Zoom. So I got on Zoom, and they are down in Mount Juliet for the Irish Open. Okay, great, this is real. And within a week, they had a car in my driveway. So they have been outrageous support to me over the years. They've given me new cars nearly every 6 months at this stage.
Shout out Mini.
Yeah.
Looking to bring on someone, you know, maybe if we align.
But they're very like me in the sense that they'll choose people who really align with the brand and kind of, they'll meet you, they'll suss you out. And
it's not a volume game with them.
Absolutely, because they could pick anyone in this whole country.
Anyone who wants a minute. Yeah, 100%.
But they've chose me, and they've been such massive support. So that's probably our biggest partnership now.
And they have, like, you're both in the same boat there a little bit. You have the same mindset of, we're looking for the right people, not just a volume game. And they're probably even disregarding slightly like the size of the following. And they're more like, this guy is what we want.
Absolutely.
It's not like there could be how many travel like vloggers and stuff you could get with hundreds of thousands of followers, and they could make a very sexy ad on the beach with horses and all that stuff.
Petrol heads or anything.
Like, exactly.
I'm not really a big car guy either, but I love their cars.
Do you do you deal with like imposter syndrome or anything like that? Like, do you have a hard time appreciating that you're like making a difference, or that you're worthy of these things that are happening for you?
Yeah, 100%. But I think it's good in a way, because like it drives me
a little bit important
further. But like, there's days, I know I'm harping on about Mini again, but there's days I'm walking out to that car and I'm like just laughing to myself, like, what is this? I don't have a car loan, I don't pay insurance, I don't pay tolls. Like, what? Like, why do I have this?
Yeah.
Or when I'm about to stand up in front of Indeed or Meta or TikTok, because we've worked a lot with TikTok, another partnership we have that's still going strong, and I'm like, why am I here? Like, why is it me? And then I kind of nearly have to snap myself back to reality. Like, we have thousands and thousands of customers around the world.
Man.
Like, you're doing something right.
Yeah.
But there is times where I'm kind of like someone's going to, I'm going to be found out sooner rather than later.
It's,
you know,
we're looking for a Max Donnelly. We've got Mark Donnelly here.
There's times you go in, and like, I went into a talk, I think it was Indeed, and there's people wearing my hoodies, and I was like, this is mad.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I think that's the nicest thing. Not obviously, there was a million things you could have gone into, but the clothing thing, it's just such a, you, without even saying anything, like, you can just walk in, if you guys make eye contact and they're wearing it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I have a local lad in the shop who's actually one of the first people who ever listened to it. He works in the center around the corner for me, and he's like, man, where are the podcasts? When I go in at like 9 o'clock at night, he works the night shift. I'm like, all right, man. I'm like, you got in. It's like a Tuesday night, no podcast.
See, people are looking forward to it though.
But like, that, and then I'm like, well, I had five shoots this week, and you know, where's the podcast? So it spurs you on like mad.
Absolutely.
I want to quickly talk about the actual clothing itself and the processes you go around. Like, do you spend time, are you looking at like fashion trends? Are you looking at like the next level of what you could do to your clothing? Or is, because it's more about the message, are you just like, I just want good fitting, well-made clothing that matches my message? Like, how much of it is a fashion thing versus a message thing, you know?
Yeah, like, so there definitely could be more of like a fashionable element to it, but I do everything by myself, and I kind of use that as an excuse, but I don't delve deep enough in like trends and what's happening. In recent years, I've started to collaborate with a local Irish artist, Sinead Power, and she's helped me with my designs and what colors I'm picking and what styles I'm picking, because she's worked in fashion.
I'd be horrible at that.
I am horrible at that. And for a long time, it was purely just, it's H-U-H, it's plain and simple. Let's just get the message out there. One thing I don't really kind of like move from is the sustainability factor. So this is all organic. It's sustainable. You'll see it in our prices, to be honest, but it's PETA approved. And everything has to come from somewhere that I can track and like have accountability from. Because I often thought like I could go to China tomorrow, right, and buy stuff for a fraction of the cost. But in 5 years, if HUH pops and they turn around and go, but you're a mental health guy, but what about the kids who made your garments in 2020? Exactly. And I'm kind of like, don't want that.
The integrity of the brand, basically.
Absolutely. And I often said, I want the brand to mirror myself of like slow, sustainable growth on this journey of mental health together.
Yeah.
So that's one thing about the clothing. But in terms of like the fashion trends and stuff, I could definitely do more. I think I tend to get caught up in the stuff that I enjoy.
Yeah.
That's some kind of something I don't enjoy. Mm. But like the creation, the relationship building, the selling, the speaking, the public talks, whatever it might be. I love that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So I definitely, as time passes, will need to bring on a team that like, right, that's your department. You deal with that.
Well, that's interesting. That was, it's my second last question. Do you look at expanding?
I'd love to.
But it's just, it needs to be when it's sustainable. There's enough work for them to do and, you know, you can justify the spend, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. Sure. Like everything has to be slow and sustainable. And I'm a big believer in failing forward. I've gotten a lot wrong over the last few years, but I've learned so much from it. And if I didn't fail in certain ways, I never would have been able to say, right, I want to do this going forward.
You just keep, you'd be making those mistakes still.
Yeah. And what I want is HUH is an umbrella brand, okay? So I want like an athleisure range, I want a casual range, sick. I want the corporate wear and like kind of the bulk orders, and then I want like the talks. Mm. So on four or five different avenues, because it applies to everyone, right? But I'm really passionate about like running and fitness, so I'd love a gym wear because the gym, physical health and mental health go hand in hand. Mm. I want the casual wear like the originals. I want, we're bringing out hoodies, you know those big hoodie jumpers this Christmas? Yeah. I want that as a range, like that casual, comfortable, mental health, like sitting on the couch. Yeah. You just want to be by yourself. Yeah.
Love it.
And then the corporate stuff. So I can envision it as like a big umbrella brand.
Yeah.
With me kind of more so at the front doing the talks and the kind
face.
Of the face of it. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But it's just, I just don't know how I'm getting there, but we're getting like, it's a slow, we're like, slow, I'm kind of trusting the process steady, right now. And whether I have to take a step back to take two steps forward, which I've done in recent years, I definitely will. Like I have no problem. Like I've swallowed my pride and going, right, that didn't work. Now I have to go get a job and I'm still working on it and I'm still getting to where I need to go. But sometimes the longer way home is the most scenic way route there. So that's kind of what I try to focus on. One of my favorite books ever by Ryan Holiday is called The Obstacle is the Way.
Yeah,
right. And I love it so much.
Yeah.
Whether it's, the obstacle is literally the way. You have to go under it, over it, around it, but you're not going backwards. You know what I mean? And like that kind of adversity and diversity is what makes your story and what makes it interesting. Just like my brother said, it's the best chapter in your book. And I was only rereading it for like the third or fourth time earlier this month.
He's like a dream guest for my podcast.
Oh, he is savage. He's in Dublin now later in the year. So I can't remember when, but I'd love to go see him.
And you, and like, I'm sure even you listening to like conversations like that is like huge for you. Mm. And like, even for public speaking, like, was that something that you were, did you enjoy that? Like at the start, enjoy it. Yeah.
I love it. So I was, how I got into it, my dad was always really good at public speaking. He was always like on the Lions Club or the GA Club. And I always saw this man like really good at like talking to people. But then I was the captain of the golf club and you'd have to get up junior captain of the golf club. And you have to get up and like do presentations and speeches. Yeah. And I was nervous, but I really like embraced it. And now I just love being in front of a room and like, I love it in the sense that like I've worked hard enough to be here and people want to listen to me because they're asking me and a lot of time they're paying me to be here.
And you're talking about something you're passionate about.
That's it. Yeah. And the one thing is, because people fear public speaking, but in my instance, when I'm up there, I'm like, no one knows the story better than me.
Yeah.
So I've no need to be afraid because no one in the room is going to like put their hand up and go,
it's not quite how it went actually. Yeah. Like, no,
I lived this. Like, you know what I mean? This is how it went. So I really, really enjoy that part. I love doing the corporate public speaking. And I think when I'm doing it, I can reach the masses a lot quicker than I could by just trying to get to individuals, if that makes sense. Mm. And that applies to like the bulk orders too. So if Sis get 100 hoodies off me, I'm reaching 100 different families in one go.
Yeah.
And I know it's in work, but they're bringing the helm and they're chatting about it and they're talking about it. And next thing you know, there's 100 different families and communities now learning.
You've already seen what impact that has, even on one family. So like having those little examples, like every time you send 100 away, you're like,
Yeah.
There's another one. We got them, guys. This is my last question, and thank you so much for taking the time.
No problem.
Generally appreciate it. It's one I like to it, and you might not even have one answer for this, but what was the most surprising or the best lesson you've learned in the last 4 years of building this business?
Oh, well, like, not like to talk about Ryan Holiday, I think ego is the enemy. That's another title of his book, that you do have to swallow your pride a lot. You have to leave the ego at the door. You're not going to know everything. You can't know everything. And like, one of the lessons I learned is like, you need people to help you. And when you do reach out to people, they're actually a lot kinder and a lot willing to give you help. Like, people are actually really, really kind and helpful. We just see a lot of negativity on social media these days. The amount of people I've reached out to, and they are so willing to say, here, this is what I did wrong. This is what you can learn. You could definitely learn from.
Don't do this.
Like, the amount of people have just met me for coffees who are like really high up business people or owning brands. And they're like, here's what I've done. Here's what you could do. Here's who you could reach out to. Here's my number. And you're kind of like, wow, okay, that's amazing. Like, you know what I mean?
You don't see that on Twitter.
But I think if we get like quite businessy, if I could go back in time, and I'm more so, as you can probably tell, creative and marketing and TikTok-y and like sales.
TikTok-y
as well. But I would go back in time and I'd say, giving someone advice, they're listening to this, like, eagle eye every penny you spend, right? Watch where every single penny is going, okay? Because I'd be that kind of creative, flipping person. Oh, we're doing this and we're doing that.
But think sometimes of the video,
it can bite you in the ass, and it's bitten me in the ass a few times, right? So I know it's boring and I know it's not sexy, but you're spending 100 quid on an ad. Let's see the return. Or you're giving 100 quid, or you're doing that and you're doing that. Like, count every last cent and make sure it's going to something useful. There's times that you do spend money and you'll never see the kind of, you'll never be able to calculate the return on it. So, but it'll come back. It definitely will. But there's certain things that I maybe threw money at and I'm like, why did I waste that? Because that was so wasteful. I didn't even know what I was investing in at the time. You know what I mean? Whether it's Facebook ads, not knowing how to actually utilize them or run them.
Without even turning them on.
But I've just thrown in 400 euro for no reason. So it would be kind of, and I know this is long-winded, but in terms of that advice, is to reach out to people because they're really willing to help. Watch where every cent is going and lean into the stuff that you don't like. Learn about the stuff you don't like. If you can afford, hire others to do the stuff that you don't like, because I really avoided it and then it kind of bit me in the ass and I've learned the hard way. But then again, I've learned from that. And like I said, fail forward. So I'm applying that now going forward.
That's going to make you a better employer when you do bring that person on. You can like, oh, I made, don't do any of this. I did 12 things here we don't want to do. They'll probably say to you, yeah, no shit. But it gives you a better chance to be able to be a better employer when that time comes.
Absolutely. And I can't wait for that time to come.
Deep breath, everyone. Thank you so much for coming on, genuinely.
Thanks for having me.
Lads, we've had a lot of worthy causes on today, or on the podcast, but today I think HUH in general, I think what you're, the message you're pushing is the reason you're going to be successful. And like, even when we talked about the two people who ran into each other in Chicago airport, like that's what it's all about. And I hope you continue to have moments like that. I can't wait to see you continue to grow. I'll be buying one of the hoodies. You'll see my name down there. Get over to Mark's platforms. I'll tag everything down below. Super. Get involved. There's value there for everyone. Thank you so much for listening. See you in the next one. Subscribe to the channel. Fuck's sake. They don't do it, even when I ask.
Thanks for having me.
No, they laugh, but they, you know, fucking subscribe, you pricks. Thank you so much for your time, man.
No problem.
See you later, folks. Later.